right. Good evening, saints. You can turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Whilst I move the podium. It's great to be back amongst the brethren. We're traveling for Christ's birthday celebration, and it was good to be with relatives, family, but nothing like the body of Christ. So I appreciate you all. Thank you. We did pretty good. It snowed a little bit there in Wyoming where we were, as it did here, but nothing to prevent us to get back home, thankfully. Thank the Lord. So we're going to continue in looking at the topic of worship and service for tonight. And I just want to jump in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. We're just going to read 1 verse 46. It says, Paul writing to the Corinthians in verse 46 of chapter 15, "However, the spirit is not first, but the natural, then the spiritual." So we'll bring that up through the process tonight of looking in further into this topic of worship and service. And as I mentioned last week, this is really a high level, 33,000 looking down type covering of this topic of worship. I mentioned Mr. Toole had a really nice, pretty in-depth class on this. Actually, it was preaching, wasn't it? On Sunday mornings, it was, I believe, a five-part series. And that was, he really broke down a lot of these topics tonight really well. So you can look that up as a resource. Prior to that, 10 years ago, I believe, Mr. Simpson taught a class in the mornings. That was like 3 or 4 months worth.
A year.
Okay. It was really in depth. Okay. And he broke down, and you could say breaks down because you can go listen to that on the website still today. And if you want to really in depth look at this, you can go to that. Search it up on the website. It's great. A lot of information will be coming from that class as well. As I mentioned last week, Mr. Jay Wilson had a great message that we pulled a lot of information from. But if you're not the type of person or learner that learns very well through audio, there's a written booklet on this topic of worship done by Kirk Heimbaugh. So that's a resource also. If you want to more information on that, you can get with me later. So last week, as a quick recap, we looked at the whole purpose for this earth is really is to bring about a people that would worship God, bring about a people of His creation, new creatures as critters is what how Jay puts it, a people that would worship God as their creator. And what we looked at and brought out in pretty lengthy detail, most of the class last week was dedicated to idolatry, worship gone wrong. Okay, worship of idols has been an issue in God's history for a long, long time, and there was a great effort made to overcome that in with the nation of Israel. 900 years we looked at is what God struggled to get idolatry out of the nation of Israel. And so we looked at some of that. We looked at even God's example right off the bat in Egypt, bringing His nation, His people out of that. And he with the plagues, He just squashed all of the idols that were that came from that. And we also looked at the whole point to the New Testament focus and teaching is to bring this people forward out of darkness and into the light. in that we talked about really the forgiveness of sins was really God's vehicle to get us to the final destination. We looked at that, and that destination is to be indwelt by His Spirit. This is God's people that would have His name residing within. His indwelling Spirit would be within His people. From day one, that was God's intention. It was to live amongst His people. And so we looked into a little bit of that as well. The other thing that we pointed out and focused on quite a bit was that idolatry is really the worship gone wrong, because if you're not worshiping God, the worship will eventually or ultimately go to Satan. Because if you're not worshiping God, indirectly you're worshiping Satan. And you can't drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You can't partake of the Lord, the table of the Lord and the table of demons. Because ultimately behind those idols are demons. And so idol worship is really a big issue. Now, people today would say, well, you know, I don't have a problem with idolatry. Mr. Toole wrapped up last week really well in his prayer, bringing out that people have idols today, for sure. If you don't think so, just all you have to do is watch an NFL game. Okay, these wackos, just fanatics. That's where the word fan comes from, right? These fanatics. We were watching one of the games over on the break there with family, and unfortunately I watched one that I didn't like very well, but there was a highlight of, I think it was like the Vikings, and there was this couple that was dressed as full-on just Viking, you know, like a Viking warlord, and just all this getup. They had, it must have been like maybe a month old baby dressed up as a Viking. And they were holding up, da-da-da, you know. Just, people have idols today for sure. If it's not things, it's people. You know, the Catholics worship the Virgin Mother Mary. And they exalt her to the level of Christ as redeemer or something. It's sick. You know, people have their idols today, and it definitely is a problem. It's really, idolatry is anything that would take our focus off of Christ and onto anything else, right? It's idols for, in our day and age, would be anything that we worship or that we put before God. Okay? A lot of us I know have struggled or are struggling with things like that in our lives. And so this topic, worship, is a serious, serious topic. Okay, it's not just about, okay, singing worship songs or, you know, and that's completely off base, which we'll look at as well. It goes much, much deeper than that. And so for 5,000 years, God has been working His plan. His eternal plan is to bring about a people that will worship Him. Worship is for God and for God alone. And so it's a deep subject. And unfortunately, I just don't have the time to do this justice. But again, we have great teachers here. There's resources for that. So what we'll do is we'll jump to Romans chapter 12 real quick. And Mr. Toole brought this out real well, and I'm sure Mr. Simpson, I didn't catch that in his class of late, but in Romans chapter 12, this just proves that there's mass confusion in terms of worship. And in verse 12, now the NASB, that's primarily what we teach from up here in front, will be the New American Standard, hopefully around the 1995 series, I think. By the Lachman Foundation, and they do a pretty good job. It's a word-for-word translation, and we always recommend and encourage, if you're going to read scriptures, read a word-for-word translation, because you really don't want any other influences or bias in there. And if it's not a word-for-word translation, you're going to have a little bit of that, or quite a bit. But the NASB does a pretty good job, but this is one place where it's just they get completely off. And that we're going to read Romans chapter 12, verse 1. And it says, "Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. Okay. Now, typically, the NASB, most of us are probably pretty familiar, when they, to make the scriptures a little easier and easier to read and understand, sometimes they'll add a word that will help us in that regard. When they do that, what I appreciate about the NASB is they'll italicize that. Okay. For those of you that have this translation, is that of worship italicized? Okay, of worship at the end there in my Bible is not italicized. Okay. Anyone have anything different? I know there's other translations that do a much better job with this, but this just goes to show you that of worship, and we're going to dig into this a little bit further. Worship is proskuneo. Okay, that is not, proskuneo is not in this verse, is not in the original Greek. They put it in there because that's how they interpret this, how worship works, okay? That its service and worship are melded together. That is not the case. So we're going to bring that out. But that of worship does not belong there. So if you have not already crossed it out, go ahead and do that, because that's not scriptural. They added that wrong manner, okay? Well, we'll look into that. But this just goes to show you that there's huge confusion throughout Christendom about worship, okay? And so we're going to uncover that. Now, a lot of the, what I like about the booklet that Kurt Kimebaugh put together is it's just a bulleted walkthrough, just point-by-point breakdown of the considerations for worship. And that's kind of how we're going to present this information tonight, just because it flows really well and I don't have to use a bunch of notes. By the way, I'm trying something new tonight with just bulleted notes, not my 8-page message written out. I've been told that it presents much, much better that way for you all. So I might skip over some things. So I'm relying on a lot of you to raise your hand and participate. What about this? And so let's have that discussion. If I happen to skip over something, please raise your hand and jump in. So we're going to look at the who, what, where, when, and how points of worship. And this in this process, we'll break this down a little bit more. Do we have any input so far? Okay.
You're the Greek words for worship and service.
We're going to cover that. We're going to cover what the Greek words for worship, how it's translated in the NASB specifically, in the various ways that, and for the words that they use on and lump into that one word, our word of worship. Next week, I'm hoping that we'll get more to the service part of things, because you cannot cover worship without covering service. Okay, so hopefully we'll be able to get to that next week. If I can finish my notes tonight. So, starting, anything else? Okay. Starting with who. Who does a Christian worship? And again, most people would say, well, God, of course, right? People worship many things, as we pretty much already brought out. People will worship things, activities, you know, skiing, fishing, we're in Montana, hunting, different things like that, right? People will worship other people, which is just really bad. But, and again, that what we're talking about there when we say that is that when something is put before God, when something is put before our worshiping God and serving God, and those two are very different. We'll cover that. Don't worry, Mr. Simpson. But those two are very different, and the Christendom likes to meld those two together. That this is not biblical. So people worship many things, but what we brought out before, if we're not worshiping God, it's indirect worship of Satan, and he'll take The reason that Satan, we brought this out last time, the reason that Satan got into the trouble that he got into is because he wanted worship, right? He wanted what was for God. Worship is for God and God alone. And so he, when what we looked at is he took Jesus out in the wilderness and he tried to tempt him with all the riches of the world, right? Worship, and if you just worship me, I'll give you all this. That's where it all really started. And he still is trying to get that worship today. Okay? He's still trying to get that worship today, but he'll take worship any way he can get it. He's not particular about that. And so if we're not worshiping God, that worship is going to go somewhere. The other thing that Mr. Simpson brought out real well in one of his class out of the 3 or 4 month class that he had that I distinctively remember is that you will serve that which you worship. Your attention will go to that which you worship, okay? And we know that service and worship, while I'm on that thought, service and worship, a point that he brought up I'll never forget too, is how can those two be the same? Because worship means bowed down, face to the ground. Well, how can you serve when you're doing that? You see the point there? They are two very different things. And so hopefully we'll break that down a little bit better as well. So worship is for God and God alone. If you turn to Revelation chapter 1, we'll look at that. In Revelation chapter 1, we'll grab 17 and 18. When I saw him, I fell at his feet like a dead man. And he placed his right hand on me, saying, "Do not be afraid, I am the first and the last, and the living one. And I was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. And I have the keys of death and of Hades." Okay, God is God. We are not. Okay? He is alive forevermore. The eternal plan through Christ Jesus is that he would die, he would be buried, he would rise again and be exalted to the throne. Worship is for God alone. John chapter 1. We're going to quick turn to a few scriptures here real quick. In John chapter 1, pretty familiar scriptures. For us in the beginning, in verse 1 of John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. Notice that he was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. If you skip down to verse 14, it says, "Then and the Word became flesh." Who is that? That's Jesus, right? The Word became flesh, capital W, Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we saw his glory, glory as of the only begotten from the Father, full of grace and truth. Obviously, that's Jesus, okay? That's God in the flesh. And so, if you look at continuing in verse 15, God testified about him, Jesus, and cried out, saying, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me has a higher rank than I, for he existed before me.' For of his fullness we have all received, and grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth was realized through Jesus Christ. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten God who is in the bosom of the Father, he has explained him." And so we see that Jesus is the Word. Jesus was there in the beginning, and Jesus is God among us. And so grace and truth was realized through Jesus. And so in the beginning, there's Jesus in his presence. And if you skip over to John chapter 4, this is where really the focus, the principal verse of when you're going to discuss worship, this is where you're definitely going to want to turn. In John chapter 4, we'll look at verses 23 and 24. "But an hour is coming, And now is Jesus talking. This is talking to the woman at the well. When the true worshipers will worship the Father, how? In spirit and in truth. For such people, the Father seeks to be his worshipers. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. And so we're going to look at this throughout the night. Excuse me. And a lot of focus on these verses. Now turn over to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8, these are some pretty well-known verses as well. We'll look at verses 9 through 11. The Apostle Paul, writing to the people in Rome, in verse 9, however, you are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God dwells in you. Remember what we talked about last week about the importance and the final destination that God has us going through in his eternal plan is to be indwelt by his Spirit, right? It says, if indeed the Spirit of God dwells in you, but if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, he does not belong to him. If Christ is in you, though the body is dead because of sin, yet the Spirit is alive because of righteousness. Okay? And so, let's grab verse 11. But if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead, God, dwells in you, okay, he who raised Christ Jesus from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies. How? Through his Spirit who dwells in you. And so, Christians, first off, if you don't have the Spirit of God within you, you don't even belong to him, okay? You're not even in the race. You're not even on the tally, okay? You have to have the Spirit of God in order to be in the game. And so we don't have time to go into that and how that the process for that, but that's critical. Again, God's eternal plan, not forgiveness of sins, it's so that we might be indwelt by his Spirit, okay? But the Spirit of him who raised Christ from the death, raised him from death. How's that? But if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, the Spirit of God, okay? Christians worship God because they have the Spirit of God in them. And so that's the critical part of all of this. Christians don't worship things. Okay, but rather we worship a who. And again, it's not the Virgin Mother Mary. Okay, it's God alone. He is God, we are not. And so if we worshiped a thing, then we could say, well, we could say how. Okay, we could say when. We could say where. All those things we could decide. Okay, if we worshiped a thing. But that's not worship of God, right? Well, some people will say, well, I worship God in this manner. Or I want to worship God this way. Okay, and that's fine. You can do that. But that's not worshiping God. Because God is God, we are not. He decides how worship comes to him. Okay? He decides how that process works. And so, really, in that, if we're going to say that, if we're going to say, well, I want to worship God this way, because that's what I am. That's how I learned, that's what I like, that's what I've always known. Okay, that's worship of self. Okay, because we're trying to do things our way. Okay, that's not worship of God. Because remember, when what we're going to look at is worship is face to the floor in subjection. Paying reverence is what we're going to look at to the Almighty God, our Creator. If we're going to dictate how that worship and how we worship and serve, then that's worship of self, really. That's not worship of God. And so we want to make sure that we're worshiping according to the Creator's way and how he's commanding us to worship in that process. We want to do it his way. And so according to the verse that we read, that process is done in spirit and in truth. And so those two things are really vital and important. So we'll look at that as well. Any input or questions? Great. Mr. Toole.
I thought that line that you said that Kevin had mentioned that whatever you worship, you will serve, is really good, because it can be difficult sometimes to understand how they are different, because like, it's like you said, they are different, mm-hmm. right? One's got your nose to the ground. How are you serving? And so if it's in spirit and truth, worship's more of an attitude. You know, you think about, okay, so somebody worships a football team. Like, well, how do you know that? They could say, oh, well, they bought the player's jersey, or they're season ticket holders, or they paid for the NFL package on TV. Those are all the things that they did in service to their object of their worship, which is this team. So it's more of an attitude. So it kind of comes down to, where do we have God placed? If we have him placed as number one and we worship him, then the things that we do because of that are our service. But it's important to have that distinction. I actually saw a video this week on the internet. And it's like there's like an 18-month-old, you know, like walking but has the diapers on but not quite talking. And the mom's recording this 18-month-old and said, we played worship music every day for 2 weeks straight.
Yeah.
And so on the TV, there was a video playing of like a mega church service, and the band was playing, and all the people in the crowd were standing, and they had their praise funnels up, so they had their hands up high, and they were swaying, and that's how they worship. And so the mom, they said, we played worship music every day for 2 weeks straight, and she's videoing the 18-month-old, and the 18-month-old picks up a toy, looks up at the TV, and then drops their toy and then puts their hands up, mimicking what the people on TV are doing, which is completely expected, right? And the mom loses it and goes, honey, 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 she's worshiping.
Yeah.
Right? And so you got to understand that, okay, if anything, service, I suppose, but like, how can that child worship? It's in attitude, it's in spirit and in truth. If you're not a Christian, you're not even in the game, mm-hmm. your comment is very, very accurate.
Yep. Yep. Great point. Anyone else? Micah?
Were you going to cover the difference of the Greek word treo, talking about the word for service? Okay.
Yep. Yep. We'll cover that. We're going to just briefly skim that explanation tonight. Anyone else? Okay. Yeah, great points. So, and we'll dive in a little bit further into that for sure. But so the next thing then is where does Christian worship take place? Okay. Depending on who you ask this question, you're going to get a lot of different answers, right? And what I really loved about Mr. Simpson's class is it really opened my eyes to where that really comes from. And because of the opening verse that we read in 1 Corinthians 15, we know the natural comes first, right? And then the spiritual. So how do we understand spiritual truths without the natural first? And so that's God's method of explaining and teaching us these spiritual concepts. And that's brought up quite a bit up here in front. And we do a great job at that. But depending on who you ask, some people would say, well, there's no real specific place for worship. It's just everywhere you go and everything you do. Right? You could be driving down King Avenue listening to Caleb worshiping, right? And loosely used. You could be reading your morning cup of coffee, reading the scriptures, and before the sun comes up, you know, just anything you do and wherever you're at is what some people would say. Others would say that it's in a specific building, and it's only when you're assembled together, right, in a sanctuary like this, and you know you're all dressed real nice, no pajamas, okay. And no coffee allowed in the sanctuary, and no instruments. We can't have instruments. That's against worship. There's a lot of different ideas of what worship, and it's just really, as we've well already brought out, it's just really messed up. Okay, it's messed up because people aren't following what the scriptures say. It's messed up because people aren't following what God says about it. Okay, maybe we should look at what God says. And so we do, again, We do a really good job with that in this congregation, is we're people of the book, right? We let this thing direct us, okay? Because again, he is God, we are not, okay? So we want to keep our ideals out of that. Well, so, okay, what does the Bible say? What does God say? Well, again, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, where we started, is that there's a process. God has a process for all that he does. And Mr. Toole well brought this out really well. I don't have time to cover it as well as he did, but there's a process from the natural to the spiritual. That verse 46 that we read, the first comes the natural, then the spiritual. Okay? And so there's this process that God has set up. There's a progression of things. Okay, so we start off in God's history from Abraham to Moses. You could worship wherever you're at, right? You could just hit the deck and face to the dirt and you're worshiping. And that's kind of where things started. From there, it was in Deuteronomy chapter 12. You can turn there. We see that God's bringing in a little bit different process here. Okay, in Deuteronomy, let's see. Deuteronomy 12, there's a lot of different places for this that you could turn to. We don't have a whole lot of time to cover this, but in Deuteronomy chapter, did I say chapter 12? Yeah. Chapter 12, verse 5. It says, "But you shall seek the Lord at the place which the Lord, Yahweh, your God, will choose from all your tribes to establish his name therefore his dwelling, and there you shall come." Okay, so God's starting to establish, okay, boys, I want you to come to this spot. Okay, I want you to worship my name where I choose. And then if you go to 1 Samuel chapter 1, let's see, 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 3. "Now this man would go up from his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests to the Lord there." Okay, so now the he's establishing, okay, I want you to go to Shiloh to worship. Okay, once a year, you go up and you worship and you sacrifice to my name. Okay, so again, he's bringing out a process. In Exodus 29, we see a progression here. In Exodus 29, we'll look at 42 through 46. I'll try to give you a little time. Exodus 29, sorry, trying to turn too quick. And again, there's a lot of different verses we could look at. We're just going to cover these few. Exodus 29, 42 through 46. "And it shall be a continual burnt offering throughout your generations at the doorway of the tent of meeting," okay, "before the Lord, where I will meet with you to speak to you there. I will meet you there with the sons of Israel, and that shall be consecrated by my glory." "I will consecrate the tent of meeting and the altar. I will also consecrate Aaron and his sons to minister as priests to me. I will dwell among the sons of Israel and will be their God. They shall know that I am the Lord their God, who brought them out of the land of Egypt, that I might dwell among them." Again, he wants to dwell with his people. He says, "And I am the Lord their God." And so at Shiloh, okay, now from year to year, it was a statute that God is starting to implement. I want you to be in this place at this time. Okay, so there's a progression now that we're seeing. Eventually, when there's the permanent structure, the temple is built in Jerusalem, pretty familiar. That was a place of worship in Jerusalem at the temple. Okay, and so there's that progression. You can worship anywhere, wherever you just hit the deck. Okay, now God's saying, I want you to worship in this place, this specific place, in these specific times. And so there's that progression. Okay, which brings us to the New Testament, John chapter 4. I'm going to turn there again. John chapter 4, Jesus talking to the woman again in the well, at the well, not in the well. In verse 21, Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father." Okay, one word I want you to notice there, neither. He said neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem. Neither, not either. Okay? Neither, not either. Okay? So the point that he's making is nowhere on earth. Okay, this whole thing is going to change. Neither on this mountain or in the temple. Okay, God's switching it up here. So essentially, without going through the long, drawn-out explanation of this that we don't have time for, I'm running out of time already. Nowhere on earth, okay, this thing is switching up. And then that he goes into and explains what we just read earlier, is that if you're going to worship God, the worshipers of God will worship not in a temple, not on a mountain, will worship him in spirit and in truth. And that's a key point in this, okay? And so, if not on the mountain, if not in the temple, then where? I could see the question coming up in her mind. Well, okay, well, where then? Okay. Remember, again, that we covered the whole process in God's history is that he could have a people with his spirit indwelling them. Okay. And in that process, we looked at and already talked about the forgiveness of sins is the vehicle to get us to the destination of being indwelt by his spirit. Okay, we get that. So then we have 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and I covered this not too long ago in a message. In verses 16 and 17, it says, "Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you?" That's 1 Corinthians 3 and 16. Okay? You are the temple. No longer a physical temple that you're going to go worship in. You are the temple. Okay? Continuing in verse 17, "If any man destroys the temple of God, God will destroy him." Why? "For the temple of God is holy, and that is what you are." The Christian is the temple. And so now we're starting to connect some dots here. He says, "You will worship God in spirit and in truth." Okay? And also that you are the temple of God. We're no longer going to a physical location. Nowhere on earth, he says, you will worship God in spirit and in truth. And so there's this progression, right? This no longer will you be faced in the dirt at a temple or on a mountain. You will worship God in spirit and in truth, and you are the temple of God. So God is looking, again, for worshipers that will worship him in spirit and in truth. Okay? This is where all of Christendom just derails. This just completely misses this or just reads over it. Okay? We can't ignore that. When it says God is looking for worshipers that will worship this way, we better listen up. Larry.
So, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I've kind of, you know, I've asked Jay the question. A Christian has, one way to put it is, a Christian has the opportunity to worship in spirit and truth 24/7. Are they automatically worshiping him in truth 24/7? The answer would be no. You know, I can be a Christian and I can go do worldly stuff, and am I worshiping in spirit and truth? No, not. I'm not. So how do I know if I'm worshiping in spirit and truth? And it really comes down to, if you want to know if you're worshiping in spirit and truth, it gets pretty easy. What do you do with your time and your money? You know, you say, well, I'm by worshiping in spirit and truth, but where's all my financial resources going? That might be, we call it code smells and software. You know, what am I thinking all day? Well, I'm thinking about the NBA. I'm thinking about how I can make more money. You're probably not worshiping in spirit and truth. But if say, well, how can I worship in spirit and truth at my job? I can't really do that there. Well, what's the reason you're at your job? Is it to provide for your family and then the kingdom? Well, it's clearly then you can worship in spirit and truth at your job. You know, all of these things fly in there. My family, having a family, how's that worshiping in spirit and truth? Well, am I raising new warriors for the kingdom? You know, then I'm worshiping in spirit and truth by having a family. You can put anything you want in there. But when it comes down to it, you know, worshiping in spirit and truth is going to come, it's going to be manifested in your actions. And so if you want to know if you're worshiping in spirit and truth, what are you doing with your time and money?
Yep. Mr. Tool.
Well, it's a really excellent point. I had a Bible study with someone one time who wasn't a Christian, but basically pushed back and said, look, we're not all like you. We can't just sit around and read our Bibles for 3-4 hours a day. I was like, huh, I didn't know I did that, you know? And then came back with, you know, I have to work. So how am I supposed to offer to God? It's like Larry nailed it. It's an attitude. It's a mindset.
Yep. And those, Mr. Shaper.
I don't know why I couldn't grab that. I guess I'm getting blind. So that passage that you read out of John, the neither nor, it reminds me of the real estate agent's favorite saying, location, location, location. And it really melds well into what you say oftentimes, where you live in. Mm-hmm. And this is what that whole subject is about. That's why when I think that this there's a particular aspect in what we'll call loosely modern-day Christianity, that worship is something that has to derive a bunch of feelings and an emotional attachment and a high and an excitement. And it's got to be something that all around us that we can feel the Spirit moving amongst all of us. And if we're not, then we're not worshiping properly. And oh, no. Well, the reality of it is that if that's what they're looking for, they're completely missing the point. Mm-hmm. Because being the temple of God, when do we stop being the temple of God? I guess that's the question. Right. You know, if we worship in spirit and in truth, and we always ask the question, well, when is a Christian not in spirit and truth? Well, in the same respect, well, when are we not the temple of God? Mm-hmm. So if we're looking for that emotional experience, we're clearly missing the point. And ultimately, that's what hamstrings Christianity. Because if we can't get past the idea that worship is something that we choose to do day in and day out, then we're never going to get past the emotional experience.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. I was thinking of how can I bring that out. You just did for me. Thank you.
I'll make it brief, but I guess everybody else is saying something, so I'll just chip in a little bit. I was thinking about, you said proskuneo means to prostrate or to kiss towards, to put your nose in the dirt, essentially. And seems like there's this progression from the old covenant, you know, patriarchal, going back in the system. It was an actual physical prostration of the body. But Jesus clarifies, he said, this is something that God is spirit. And then I start thinking back to the inner man. We have an inner man. Our inner man is prostrated before God and is in his presence. And you kind of get a picture throughout that in scripture. But I don't want to step on other things you might be able to expound upon that. But I was thinking he's really taking something that's very physical and he's making it about something that's spiritual.
Yep, we can close up because that was the rest of my. it is a great point, and we're gonna have to close up here, guys. But worship is definitely, and we're gonna look at proskuneo. I didn't get quite as far as I would hope to tonight, so we might have to go for a couple of extra weeks. But you know what we're gonna look at in proskuneo is that, you know, what the definition of that means. And it means, you know, face down in the dirt. But we don't want to get off the rails there with that and focusing on the Greek definition of that, because a lot of folks will say, oh yeah, proskuneo, and that's a physical worship. That's a physical thing that we do. If we're not facing the dirt throughout assembly, then we're not worshiping correctly. Okay, that's not right either. There's the progression that God has in place and that he's brought us through. In spirit and in truth, if someone's going to continue to go along that line of proskuneo of worship, facing the dirt in New Testament times today, and say that we're not worshiping unless your face is down on the floor, that's not right either. And there are people that say that today. Unfortunately, I don't know how they maintain that. But so we are out of time. We will pick up next week, Lord willing. I wanted to cover a few more things about the spiritual temple, some of the things that the New Testament brings out in terms of where worship happens. A really large portion of what I wanted to cover tonight that we didn't even get to is what. What is Christian worship? And so we're going to look at a lot of those Greek terms, proskuneo and latreo and some of those others. Some of the other Greek words that they lump into our English word worship. So we'll cover some of that as well. So we just ran out of time tonight. And then hopefully I'll be able to lump in with that service. I want to do the topic of service justice. So we might be looking at another 2 weeks. So, okay? Mr. Tool, come on up.